I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yay! You are listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. Believe in me, and ye shall find peace. And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, you'll have even more peace with this extended ad-free version of the first of two CES-focused podcasts. As you're probably now aware, you're listening to CES Heaven, where we'll be remarking on the most marvellous of the electronic souls that passed through the Consumer Electronics Show's pearly concrete gates this year. And joining me for this celebration of divine consumerism is Archangel Andrew Hoyle of CNET.com.
Hi there!
Hello, Brother Andrew, who is also actually my brother. And thank you to patrons including Angel Matt Cotton, Angel Fernando, and Angel Neil Horton, who are supporting us amongst many other people directly via Patreon and keeping us in supply of forgiveness and halo polish. Let the entertainment begin. Andy, there will be haiku readings, poetry recitals, and maybe some musings on the inner soul. First, I think we should sensibly recap the themes of the show this year, which were that 8K TVs are really coming soon. Companies thought the release of Samsung and Huawei's folding phones were evidence enough that there's a need to push into folding tablet computers, and that 5G is going to get affordable and fast. For example, Chinese manufacturer TCL showed off the first smartphone to feature 5G that it said will launch in the US for under $500. It's a good half, about half anyway, of what the most cheap or the cheapest current models tend to run for. We also saw the tables turn on the car front. In past years, CES always played host to car companies who showed off accessories and hardware for their vehicles, whether that was hi-fi systems or in-dash entertainment or navigation. But this year, it was the other way around in some instances. Tech companies making cars. Sony being the poster child of this little about turn, which showed off a working prototype. It said it has no plans to sell it, but then Nokia was manufacturing toilet paper in the 1960s and probably didn't think at the time it was going to become the biggest phone maker in the world. A cat just jumped into the studio.
Hi, Toulouse. You smell of fish.
This was also the year that we were able to answer the question, is meat technology? The answer apparently is yes. Impossible Foods, the American startup, demoed its plant-based substitute for ground pork. Attendees were able to try some, and one reporter for The Verge described it as, quote, spongy. I'll leave it at that. Elsewhere, it was business as usual. Lots of smartphone stuff, massive 4K TVs, faster chips and modems, and Donald Trump's daughter. Andy and I are going to spend this episode talking through some of our favourite products shown at CES. Some predictable, some probably less so. And in the next episode, in a couple of days, we'll be doing the opposite with Ian, journeying into CES hell for the worst of the stupid. Okay, Andy, I'm going to let you pick the first product, and you managed to choose something that I would have put at the top of this list anyway, which is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Fold.
Yes, I picked that.
Tell me what this product is first before you tell me your opinions of it.
So, like any other Lenovo ThinkPad, it's a laptop, which I am putting in my own air quotes, which nobody can see, so just imagine air quotes there, around the world laptop. So it is a laptop that utilizes a folding screen, much like we've had this year on folding phones with like the Samsung Galaxy Fold and the Huawei Mate X, but this time it's on a bigger screen in a laptop form.
Just explain whether it's a laptop style, as in it has a keyboard and a screen and then the screen folds, or if it's just a big screen that half of which becomes a keyboard.
It's the latter. It's one big screen, basically, and I think it's a 13-inch screen. So imagine something like the biggest iPad Pro, but it bends in the middle and it folds up. And the idea being that you can either pair it with a Bluetooth keyboard and use it as like almost like a big all-in-one desktop computer. You could fold it, the screen, in half, and the bottom half of the screen could become an on-screen keyboard. Basically, there's a lot of different configurations. Now, the reason I put those air quotes around the word laptop is that the actual product is the screen. Now, I would argue that just a big screen. It's a computer. Is a tablet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a laptop.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it's no problem. They've made the world's first folding tablet or laptop. Like, a laptop is a screen with a hinge that connects to a permanent physical keyboard. Surely what they've made is a folding tablet that can connect to a Bluetooth keyboard.
Now, there are some interesting themes being addressed here. The first of which is a laptop, or rather, is the umbrella term defined by the use case? Is it defined by the form factor, or is it defined maybe by other physical characteristics like a physical keyboard? Because a laptop, as you say, is a computer you can use on a lap, on your legs. You know,
no, I don't think the positioning of where you use it like that defines its laptop. We know laptop as a term has been defined by what the product has been, i.e. a screen and a physical keyboard connected together in a clamshell format that closes. Like, that's what a laptop is. A tablet you can also use on your lap, you know, an iPad with a case, but it's a tablet. It's not a laptop. You're using it the same way, but like, I mean, this is complete semantics and entirely pointless. The exciting thing is they've made it. I'm just disagreeing slightly with the terminology that's surrounding it, but
okay,
that's irrelevant really, because the product they made is actually quite interesting.
Yeah, and it runs Windows. Like, that's another difference, isn't it?
Full Windows inside, and it's got I think a decent setup of specs. And which I think are reasonably common to like maybe a lower end laptop. This is not sort of super high performance laptop level of things. This isn't going to replace your MacBook Pro. This isn't going to be a gaming PC.
I don't know if we know the specifications of this.
No, we don't, because I think at the moment this is in sort of concept form.
Yeah, and it's an OLED screen. I know that, and I know that it's full fat Windows.
Yeah,
but that's it. We don't know. I mean, obviously it's got flash. It's not got moving parts inside. Mm-hmm. But it may.
They could easily put moving parts inside.
Why would you need to?
Well, hypothetically, I'm just saying that, you know, you say that as though obviously, oh, because it's a folding thing. Hypothetically, you could put a disk drive in it if you wanted to. It just doesn't go in where the hinge is. It would go just like a regular laptop in now. It would go in the base part in one of the sides that doesn't fold. You know, batteries aren't foldable. They will have batteries in one side and the other, but not in the middle where it does the folding. So I think there's a lot of different things that they can do with this design, but I think it's interesting that we've got folding displays appearing on much larger screens rather than we've seen them first at a consumer level on phones. Now, if you'd have asked me a few years ago which side we'd see them first, I'd have said we'd see them on larger screens before we saw them on smaller screens.
I'd have agreed.
That's
yeah.
Typically how the technology works. Things get miniaturized.
Plus, we already have the concept sorted for us. We know that we like laptops where there is a thing that's on the desk and a screen that folds up and it closes in half and you put it in your bag.
Yeah, and we've already seen things like, again from Lenovo, like the Yoga, the 3-in-1 tablets / laptops where, you know, the screen can fold all the way around and it can stand up, so you can use it like a laptop or you can use it like a tablet. So I would argue that the potential need for a folding screen there, and I do use the term need loosely, I don't think this is anything we do need, but I would say if we do need anywhere, it's probably more in the laptop / tablet world than in the smartphone world. I've had the Galaxy Fold since it went on sale, and I use it pretty much every day, but I don't need it.
Well, I want to ask you one question then, and to get your opinion on this before we move on, because I think there's one very key difference between a laptop that folds like this or a tablet that folds like this and a folding smartphone is that with a phone, it's either closed or mm-hmm. you're using it open. With this, to use it in a laptop mode, you're sort of having it halfway between closed and open. That means that there's going to be a little like a curvature on the screen that is not, I can't imagine, going to be amazingly well utilized without some pretty careful software design. And that's the element that I think it will be interesting to see evolve. And at $2,500, which is what we know this is going to cost when it comes out later this year, that's going to, I mean, it's an early adopter product, obviously, but I think that's going to be something that we're going to need to see some very serious innovation in if it's going to catch on.
Agreed. And also, I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, that this the screen, it folds closed. The screen folds in on itself like a book, and much like the Samsung Galaxy Fold does.
Yeah, it's Galaxy Fold rather than Huawei Mate X.
Yeah, whereas what I think would be more useful is a larger screen which folds back around on itself. Because in that instance, you can fold it basically into a tent format, and it can stand up on its own, and then you can connect a keyboard and type on it. But then it can also fold out, and basically, if you've got suddenly a big 15-inch sketch pad to do artwork on or to watch movies and stuff when you don't want to use it as a laptop, I think that would be a much more practical device.
Yep, I would 100% agree with that. I can think of lots of use cases. I just had a mental image of being used in a bank situation where you have somebody on either side, or even in a podcast situation like we're doing, and you have one in the middle,
yeah,
and one of you is looking at half the screen that's pointing to you, and yeah, the other person is half pointing the other way. Yeah. And in that scenario as well, it wouldn't matter if the fold was there, because you're not using that bit of screen anyway.
You don't use the top bit. Yeah, or you're sitting on a train at a table opposite your friend, and you want to both watch the same movie. You've both got two pairs of Bluetooth headphones connected, and you can watch the film on both sides. All kinds of apps.
Let's move on to one other one that I wanted to point out, because I think it's relevant to what we've just discussed. This one was my pick. And this is actually the Bridge Pro Plus keyboard with trackpad. This is for the iPad Pro. And what this is, it's a glorified keyboard that you clip onto an iPad, like an iPad
just
Pro.
Just like you would any other keyboard now.
Any other one, exactly. It looks just like it, except it has the actual keyboard bit comes much closer to you, and there is a trackpad on it, because iPad OS now supports mice. It's a bit of a faff to enable it, but it does support it, and so the trackpad can be used instead of a mouse. And so what you're ending up with in that situation is a very, very laptop-like setup on an iPad, which calls into question all of these things once again. Is that a laptop? Because it's exactly as a laptop looks. It's just that it's predominantly a screen attached to an accessory.
I got kicked out of a cafe recently for working on my iPad when I was using it on the keyboard. With the iPad Pro, when it's in keyboard mode and you've got it propped up on the keyboard thing, so it looks a bit like a laptop. Because can I swear on your podcast?
No. Expletive deleted.
I very much hate cafes where they get all prissy about people on laptops. Say, oh, sorry, no, you can't work here. Like, what's the point of being a cafe then? Like, it's ridiculous.
Anyway, you know what? Yeah, but I was
in Amsterdam, okay, and I was working at in this area on my iPad. This guy comes over and says, you can't work here. I'm like, why not? Like, we don't like people to use laptops. So it's not a laptop, it's a tablet. And I've come here to work. Like, if you want my custom, I need to do my job. It's like, oh, sorry, you can't do that. So I said, right, okay, fine. So I just pulled the keyboard off it and said, what's your policy on working on tablets? I said, tablets is fine. Like, the work hasn't changed. Do you not think that's a bit ridiculous?
I think that is ridiculous. And I can tell you a very similar example. I recently had to go to the US embassy to have my American visa renewed. And at the gate, you're now allowed to take tablets, but you're not allowed to take laptops.
Mm. Yeah.
So
a bit daft.
Although interestingly, in that situation, when I went in, they made me take out my iPad and my phone and open at least one app. So it's not enough to have it on charge. You had to show that it was a working tablet and a working phone, which is more than they do at airports. At airports, you have to have it charged, but I've never, in all of my flights, I've never been asked to actually show my device is charged.
Interesting. Sometimes they do, because I think the idea being if you've got a dummy, it could just have a bomb in it. And so you don't, if you can't show it turns on.
Yes.
It could be because there's a bomb in it.
Alienware UFO concept. Tell me what this is.
This is Nintendo Switch for PC games. That is it in a nutshell. It is fundamentally a gaming PC unit, but it's handheld. And if you just picture Nintendo Switch in that, it's all like an old Game Gear, something like that. You know, both hands
game
on one
gear.
Side.
You couldn't joystick. Think of a more appropriate comparison to the Nintendo Switch than the Game Gear from 1993, its six AA batteries and its atrocious games library.
Am I right? Cool Spot was pretty good.
Cool Spot wasn't developed exclusively for the Game Gear.
No, but it was all right. Did you know that Cool Spot was a promotional tool for Virgin Cola?
I did indeed.
Oh, well, there you go then.
Yeah, did you know that...
He is the spot of the Virgin Cola's logo.
Yeah, I did know that. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
Anyway, but this is for PC games. It is a concept, but presumably this would be a Steam-linked or maybe an Alienware-specific gaming library platform somehow.
But it's sounding a lot like the NVIDIA Shield.
No, because it's a self-contained unit rather than a streaming device. And so the idea would be that you would have things installed on it. And the reason I like this, and this was echoed in our write-up by, I think, Dan Ackerman on CNET, but or maybe even Scott Stein, one of them, one of those good guys.
I'm looking it up now and I can confirm it's neither of those people. It's Daniel Van Boom.
Oh, it's Dan Van Boom.
Which I have to say...
He's DVB, he's a good guy.
That is a fantastic name.
And he's a very great guy.
Yeah, Mr. Boom.
But it is amazing what the Nintendo Switch has done for gaming for everyone. Everyone always says the same thing, but it's amazing how easily you can quickly pick up and within seconds you are back playing the game that you were playing before. Whereas with consoles, as you know, as we all know, it's a pain in the ass to play games. You turn it on and it takes forever to load. I mean, it's got to do updates and everything is slow and laborious and you've got to plan ages in advance to play like a quick round of a game. And I've been frustrated recently because I've always really liked Forza Horizon 4, but they launched a new mode that I didn't know at the end of last year, which is basically Fortnite but for car racing. And I discovered this the only last week and I really, really liked it, and it's really easy to go on and play a quick round, but it takes so damn long to load that game and to get it set up that I've got to find a long period of time where I can get it setting up, I can get it loading, and then play. Whereas the Switch is the opposite. Like, anytime I want to just quickly pick up a game, at the moment it's The Witcher 3. It's a big title, but you're straight in there immediately.
This is exactly how I feel about iPad gaming, which is why I do almost all of my gaming now.
And we can say the same about generally mobile gaming versus PC or console gaming. And that is what we want the Alienware UFO to do.
Well, let's get back to the UFO then, because I'm looking at a picture of it now and it does remind me a little bit of like a PS Vita, like if Microsoft had designed the PS Vita.
It's exactly like that.
It's exactly that, isn't it? It's like an Xbox, but a Vita, but Xbox. I do wonder if it's coming in as much a wrong time as the PS Vita did, which launched as basically a mobile console in your hands, but right at the time that everybody moved to using their phone as a gaming platform.
Yeah.
With this, that is already established, and now the next big thing that everyone wants to do is streaming,
yes,
which you'll stream to your handheld device. And so I wonder if this could potentially be a great product at the wrong time, or if it has enough runway left that actually there's a demand for a product like this, because you're going to have to carry this around with your phone, and history proves that's not always attractive.
Yeah, some of the things that are unknown about it as well, like is how much of it is done locally, because part of the thing with PC gamers is that they run the absolute top AAA titles at max everything. And it's very much geared towards people who want to play super-powered titles. That's why those monster gaming rigs with, like, twin latest graphics cards exist. This, obviously, something handheld isn't going to have that. Like, the whole thing itself is about the same size as a gaming graphics card.
It's big. It looks about the size of a fully grown side of a horse's face, doesn't it?
No. No, it doesn't. That horse's face is 2 or 3 feet.
A horse's face is not as big. For reference, Andy's holding up a size. You could fit two
horses are massive.
Have you watched The Godfather?
Have you ever? Yes. Have you ever seen? Have you ever met a horse? They're immense.
I've ridden horses.
Yeah, no, I've won.
And won rosettes.
Yeah, you did win rosettes.
Yeah. So I'm good at horse.
But you were on small. You were on small little ponies.
No, I wasn't. Those ones were full size.
The thing you are saying, you are showing, is not the size.
Right.
It is. I'd say it is a bit. It is a like a slightly chunky Nintendo Switch.
Who's to say?
Which is, as I'm sure anyone will know, nothing like the size of a horse's head.
Well, anyway, this UFO from Alienware is a prototype. According to the CNET write-up, there are no plans for a market release right now. Like everything at CES, or not like everything, but like so many things at CES, the idea is to gauge public reaction and see if there's impetus to put something into production. So who knows? We don't, but I can't see this being a hot seller, but I also think it could be very popular with a niche crowd.
I mean, I think you're right, and I think you're right about the timing of it. But I think for that reason, that's why I put it in here, not necessarily as one of my real big wow things from the show, but as a very interesting product that is being launched by a major brand. That's not, you know, this isn't some small little niche company which is trying to do some small product and they haven't really done their research. This is Alienware, which is Dell. Like, it couldn't be from a bigger company. So it's interesting that they are putting that sort of money into a product at this point.
Tell me about MarsCat. This is one you put in here. This is an autonomous robot cat that just wants to do its own thing, according to the CNET headline.
And which I wrote.
Describe what it is.
So it is a robot cat. It's much in the same vein as Sony's famous Aibo robot dog. This one is the feline version. It's a Kickstarter, but it's already far surpassed its goal, and it's due to go into production in March. But basically, it is a robot pet that will walk around. It's got articulated knees and all that stuff, and it acts as supposedly as much like a cat as possible. Now, that to me means, okay, so it's going to be aloof, it's going to ignore you, or it's going to come and knock things off your table for fun.
Well, I mean, we've had that just on this episode.
Toulouse will do whatever the hell he wants.
An
He's
actual
brilliant.
Cat has yeah. jumped in front of the microphone already once in this show.
Yeah. So the idea is that it will just basically be a cat. It will do a lot of its own things, but you can then interact with it when you want to. You can...
The noises...
Yeah, if you can hear that, that is Toulouse playing in his box, which is just outside the door. You can say stop and it will stop, and or say come here and it will come to you, which is again unlike almost any other cat. So it's interesting because they say that it will learn and it will develop their own personality. You know, if you play with it more, it'll be more playful. Some of them may even be quite lazy and not really want to do a lot. But it's yeah, I mean, it looks like there's no fur on it. It's got like a soft touch, silicon looking skin.
So it's a sphinx.
But even less furry than a sphinx.
Would it have killed them to put some fake fur?
I was thinking they could have could have made it more cuddly. Bit of padding and a bit of fake fur.
You've seen that product that's, it's like the back end of a cat and it has a wagging tail.
Yeah.
And it's for you to lay against and the tail wags against your head. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
They could have just done that.
They could have done something. I think with a cat, they needed to. The robot dog is fine because of its shape and its lack of fur. It actually looks a little bit like a Jack Russell. Aibo, I'm talking about. Because Jack Russell is, as you know, having got a Jack Russell.
And a cat. Very, very a real short, flesh and blood cat.
Real flesh and blood cat. A Jack Russell's fur is so smooth that... It almost doesn't look like fur. It could just be like a painted pattern. And so Aibo actually kind of looks a little bit more realistic for that reason. Whereas I think on this, it does, from the pictures that I've seen, it does look a little bit like they're showing the interior of the robot and they're yet, you know, and oh, you can zip this cat case around it to make it look more friendly. And that isn't the case. They do other versions with different like patterns on it, but it's just like a painted shell.
Come on, right, this is the CES heaven. So this is the episode where we're broadly talking about things we like, not exclusively glowing, but generally things that we think are great.
Yeah, I like cats.
I like cats too. So why not just get a cat?
Because in a lot of places they can't have animals. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the Japanese companies have been spearheading these, because as you know from your knowledge of Japan and its culture, that people live in such small places where they can't often have pets,
and that's why they have cat cafes.
And that's why they have cat cafes, but it's also why small robot companions like this could actually serve a very real purpose in giving somebody something to have and interact with at home where they can't actually have animals. I mean, they've done plenty of trials and clinical trials of robots in old age care centres, and provably that they have been a very real benefit to the people in there. They have a thing to actually talk to and to talk with, which is, I mean, I think...
Well, you're right. I mean, loneliness is an epidemic and will get so, particularly in Japan with an aging population. Mm. I don't believe that's why this product exists, though.
I don't necessarily think, no. I mean, I don't believe that was in any way part of their Kickstarter campaign. But that is fundamentally why a lot of these robot pets and general, you know... What's a good umbrella term? Just emotional
companions.
Like robot companions.
We've talked about emotional support animals on the show before.
We have, but just general robotic companions. I'd say that's one of the reasons they are a thing to begin with, is because it is addressing a need in some parts of the world for that sort of thing.
Mm. Okay.
As well as it being an interesting toy.
Do we know when this is going on sale?
Yeah, so as I say, it's hit its Kickstarter goal, more than. It's well over it.
I don't like it when people say, as I said, it makes me feel like I wasn't listening.
Well,
I wasn't.
I did. And if you want to listen back in the edit, which I'm sure you will do, you will hear me say, okay, it's due to ship in March.
March. Okay, excellent. Well, I'm feeling that I've given it a bit of a hard time.
Are you pleased with that one?
I was trying to get something like, I'm sure there's a clause in a contract somewhere,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, don't pause. SanDisk showed off an 8 terabyte external SSD. 8 terabytes, Andy. What would you do with 8 terabytes?
Fill it within a week.
With?
Photos, videos, everything. Backup, permanent backup. As soon as this goes on sale, I will be getting one.
Wow, okay.
And it'll be well over $1,000. Because I was speaking to SanDisk about this, because when I saw the that news drop, I called them up and said, because, you know, this is a prototype device, but it's a prototype device that will go on sale. Like, we will have 8 terabyte drives. Like, we just will do. So, like, why is it a prototype rather than just a product that you've actually put on sale? And do you know when this is going to be? And they obviously wouldn't tell me anything at all, but they said, like, yeah, it'll happen, but we don't know when. But I have the 2 terabyte version of this drive, which is the current highest capacity.
The one that was just in front of me
in
the other room? Yeah, I've seen those. They look amazing.
They are amazing. And for people like me, like traveling photographers and people who create a lot of content on the go, it's amazing because I don't have the capacity. My MacBook Pro, I think, is only 500 gig in its hard drive. My iPad Pro is 1 terabyte, and even that is mostly full. And when I'm particularly now, I shoot a lot of video as well as photos. I need huge, vast amounts of storage, and I usually need it on the move because I need access to those files often when I'm on the go. And if you're a traveling videographer, you need to have a big archive of your existing B-roll footage ready to go so that wherever you are, you can cut, particularly if you work in places where, you know, cloud services you can't rely on, because if you don't have the network access to the internet speeds, then trying to download maybe half a terabyte, if you're shooting in 4K or something, then 8 terabyte is suddenly not a lot of space.
No, it's
a very usable amount of space.
I was in New York recently shooting video, and one of the things that I bought ahead of that was it is the tiniest little USB drive I've ever seen. It's 256 gigabytes, mm-hmm. and it's barely any larger than the actual bit of USB that needs to be in the USB hole. It's not flush when it's in the socket, but it looks
basically like the little Bluetooth adapters you'd have for wireless mouse.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's no bigger than that, and it wasn't even that expensive.
Yeah.
And I was using it for that exact purpose in part. The other part was I wanted to watch some films on a plane.
The two terabyte SanDisk SSD that I've got, it's the Extreme Portable, I think is what the range is, and that was, I think I bought that for 500, and even then at 2 terabytes I still have to closely manage what's stored on it, so that I'm only, because it's full, so I have to make sure that I'm only taking what I actually need for each thing, and there's plenty of space for backup when I'm going somewhere.
Well, the other side of this story is that SanDisk also showed off a 1 terabyte USB-C thumb drive,
yes,
which is very exciting. None of this comes as a surprise, because we do revisit this topic every year when the sizes double, but there is something rather satisfying about it hitting a terabyte as opposed to being 500 gig or 750 gig or something like that, 1 terabyte. And I like the design of this because it has a traditional USB on one side and USB-C on the other, which is genuinely very, very useful if you're using multiple different products. You know, if it's a PC, obviously you want the old type. If you're on an iPad or something, you want, or a phone, you want the new one. So I wanted to note those. And although I have, I'm pretty sure it was last year, SanDisk had a 1 terabyte micro SD card.
Yeah, I think they did. Yeah, I think they've got that already. And MDBC is around the corner, and SanDisk often has interesting products to show off there. So I'm expecting to see another advancement on the micro SD side this year coming, if not more things. And probably they'll say that, oh yeah, we are putting the 8 terabyte SSD into production. When I spoke to them about it, they said, oh, we'll, you know, put it into production depending on kind of like the market response to this launch. And obviously everyone goes, wow, holy crap, look at this, isn't this amazing? So obviously they're going to put it into production. It's like, of course they will.
I know. It always happens, as you say. Well, we had a few bits of feedback from patrons in our Discord chat who they wanted to mention some of the things that they thought were interesting from CES this year. John Evans had said that he was intrigued by foldable tech, but he says he's still looking forward to transparent tech. He says, I can see Apple or Samsung doing a completely transparent phone at some point. I can't see the point in a transparent phone, but I can see the appeal in one that could go in and out of translucency, but I also don't know how that would be even possible.
Isn't that, I mean, we've just had that with the OnePlus Concept One,
which we're about to talk about.
Oh, okay.
But yes, we have had that.
Right. Well, so, my point being is that, just to step on the toes of what you're about to talk to next, that is a phone where on the back, the camera unit can fade behind glass, and when it needs to be used, electro something or other kicks in and the camera unit is revealed.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking about that in the extended version of the show, which will be the next segment
So I've given a teaser to those people who don't pay.
This sounds awfully scripted, ladies and gentlemen. I promise it wasn't. Back to the feedback from Discord. We also had from Luke. He says he finds the idea of a premium vertical video service a little bit contentious, perhaps. We have seen talk of...
Is this in response to the Samsung Ciro TV that they launched at CES? The vertical TV, yeah. I mean, it can do vertical and horizontal, but it's... It's interesting, and we had in our video on that, we had a statistic that 40% of video that's created online is in vertical format, which I think is probably about right. I mean, I would argue that I'm sure it is down to sheer volume of the amount of people just going around shooting random things.
Of course it is.
But in terms of the amount that you would actually really want to sit and watch on a TV, so you're talking of a certain quality, a certain production level. I don't imagine much of that is being shot in vertical format. So I'd say most of the stuff that's being shot on a phone in vertical format is still really designed to be watched on a phone rather than a 4K 63-inch
I think
TV.
We should have a diagonal phone and just have as a halfway house. Diagonal video.
Circular, then it can go either way.
Well, we did see that. There was a circular phone at CES this year. I can't remember the name of it now. This year. It was circular and it had 2 headphone sockets. Yeah, it was a really interesting concept. Google it now. I'll keep talking as you Google it. I can't remember the name. Andy will furnish you with that information in just a few moments. I can see his thumbs busily doing what so many thumbs do these days, which is to translate thought into action. He's looking puzzled. Has he found anything?
Yeah. It's called... Oh, my God. I mean, you love the name.
Is it Squircle?
No, but it's so close to Squircle. It's Circle, but C-Y-R-C-L-E.
Go on, who makes it?
Oh, is Circle?
That that's the name, is it? But it's round, isn't it? It's circular. It's a round display with 2 headphone sockets. I thought it was really interesting. I didn't include it in our running order. Maybe I should have put it in there in advance. It reminded me a little bit of the one of the old weird Nokias that was... It wasn't a circle as such, but it was basically round. The product, that is, the screen wasn't. But I don't know what the point of it was, which is why I didn't include it. I just couldn't think of anything to say other than what we've just said.
It's amazing. It's bonkers. What's the point?
Exactly.
What is the point of a circular phone? It reminds me of like the Nokia phone, which was, what,
That's what I just said.
Oh, did he? Oh, I'm sorry.
Because you don't listen.
No. I was looking at it. I was absolutely gobsmacked by this thing and trying to think of something to say. So I wasn't listening to you at all. But I'm assuming you were talking about the one that's got it's sort of a square, but it's got rounded off corners. And
yeah.
Button. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you to patrons for giving us those thoughts in advance. We are going to play some music, and in the Patreon version, as Andy has nicely spoiled the secret, we're going to talk about something else. And for the non-Patreon version, hell, who knows? Let's find out. Well, Andy and I just spent 15 minutes or so debating furiously a little bit about the OnePlus phone that has disappearing cameras, but also more broadly about everything involved in reviewing old technology and whether there's any point in it.
I forgot we were talking about the phone.
I know you did.
Yeah, the phone looks fine.
The phone's fine, wasn't it? Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, you can get that if you wish by becoming a patron at patreon.com/UKTech. In fact, you get access to extra message and all the back catalogue of our ad-free extended episodes as well. But nonetheless, thank you no matter how you are supporting us. Andy, thank you for being here for this show one of two shows focused on CES. Tell people where they can find you. Not physically, because you're in Palmer's Green, but online.
I am for the next 2 weeks anyway. You can find me with @BatteryHQ on most social channels. If you go to YouTube, then you should look for Andrew Langson Photography, because that is where I have my YouTube channel, which is all about the photo shoots that I do, both personally and professionally. If you are in any way interested in that, do please go along, subscribe and like my videos.
And if I can make a suggestion actually on that front, Andy recently published a video about taking photographs in the Goit Valley in the Peak District. Even if you're not into photography, you can watch that just for the relaxing soundtrack and watching somebody walk around nature.
We talked about soundtracks. I realized that on that video, yeah, I intentionally didn't put any soundtrack on
I loved it
because it was because I was out, you just hear the sounds of the nature which was in it. Yeah. So I just left all the background audio on. I didn't put any soundtrack in it.
Well, that's exactly right, but that's one of the reasons why I liked that one. Yeah. But anyway, we'll include a link to all of those things as well as the stories we've talked about today, as always, at uktechshow.com. Now, normally at this point in the podcast, we turn to Tom Merritt to talk about what's been happening in the wider world of global tech this week. He's been at CES, and he will, I'm sure, have a promo for us on the second CES show we're doing. But instead, because the other week in a previous show recently, we talked about Japanese toilet tech, and I joked about somebody being in Japan at that particular point, here is Tom Merritt with a report about his experience with Japanese toilets.
As luck would have it, this, for the first time, was the trip in which I decided to try the extra functions, you may call them, of the Toho and other toilets that you find in Japan. It was not a surprise. It was not a mistake. I just sort of gritted my teeth and said, all right, let's see how this works. And not nearly as powerful as it looks when you see it from the outside, as you were talking about on the show a couple weeks ago, where it will spray all over the bathroom. It definitely was unusual, I would say. Not necessarily something I would do again. And I'm not 100% confident that it gets the job done better than the way that I'm used to. But it does work. It won't harm you, and probably not going to be as otherwise impacting to you as you might expect. There's my on-the-ground report from Tokyo.
Tom Merritt there, the archangel of sensitivity and euphemism. A pleasurable report. Thank you very much, Tom. And Tom will be back talking about things that are not toilets in a few days, I'm sure. Tom Merritt, DailyTechNewsShow.com. Andy, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
For you, I also vaguely enjoyed this episode.
Good.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.